Apologies, had a phone call and it kicked me off of everything. The multitasking capabilities and between the Twitter Spaces and a phone call are kind of dicey. So sometimes it just boots your ass off everything.
What's up, man? What's popping, Steffi? What's going on, man?
Oh, Nada, what you up to?
Just doing that remote work, driving around, getting errands done at the same time.
Nice. You're watching your coins moon?
Yes, I am. Thankfully.
That's good. Yeah, like we have a few that are about to just launch that we've been talking about. Did you notice?
Yeah, I got my Zeph bag. I was listening to your space like an hour and a half ago or 2 hours ago or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Did you just decide to do another space out of nowhere?
Well, no, I had one like going, but then my little phone thing crashed just now, so I kind of start over.
Yeah, dropped calls twice. Yeah. How's it going, guys?
What are you gonna do? Oh. Hey, Drew.
So, speaking of that second space that you guys were talking about, privacy, Zeph, wondering about DEX integrations, because it was such a problem before, right? So apparently Thorchain abandoned their integration with XHB because it would have exposed the addresses during the exchange. So I guess there's this DEX called Sarai DEX. They've been working with XMR trying to figure out a way to make that not happen. And I guess supposedly they found it. I was wondering if anyone knows anything about possible future integrations with Zeph or XHB or any of these other privacy protocols, because it seems like maybe somebody's figured it out.
I've heard about Sarai from somebody. What's the URL for them now?
Hang on a second. I have it on my, I have it retweeted.
How do you spell it? Is it
S-E-R-A-I here?
You're right.
On my profile, I have it. It is, I even responded to him and said, hey, can you guys integrate with Zeph? And they said, it's been noted and is feasible. Same technical commentary as Haven applies. So.
Looks like it's Sarai DEX, S-E-R-A-I DEX, Sarai.exchange.
You got it.
Is their site.
Yep, that's their Twitter handle.
Swap Bitcoin, so. Ethereum, DAI, stablecoin, Monero, and more.
And Zephyr's official account is following him. So, I mean, it seems like there's at least some awareness here, maybe for something to come on board.
Is it actually open yet, or is it just like they have a GitHub exploration thing?
Well, as soon as OKX delisted XMR, and there was all that FUD about privacy coins, they immediately sent out a tweet and it said, Sarai will launch with BTC. No, it's not live yet. BTC, ETH, DAI, and XMR. Delistings are not part of the network. Once something is integrated, we plan to support it forever. They're big on privacy. I think, they haven't launched yet, but it seems like maybe they have the integration in place. They figured out what they have to do to actually make it work. So.
Yeah, there's a Reddit on the subject on Reddit/Monero, r/Monero. There's a announcing Sarai new DEX for Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and so that this is not an atomic swap platform. I don't know all the different technical reasoning behind this, but yeah, if you can basically create a DEX that incorporates XMR, then you can most definitely incorporate Zephyr, since it's the same basic protocol. So, yep.
The only other concern
and Chad
is that
from Thorchain, by the way, did not say it was impossible to incorporate in the Thorchain. It just hasn't.
That's right. He he didn't. So basically,
he said it'd take about a month of work to implement it, but it's.
I think he mentioned Sarai actually saying, we're gonna let them figure out how to do it and then follow their lead. So,
I mean, sounds reasonable. That and like third chain community may or may not want privacy unless they want to like paint another target on their back. So it might have to be like a third chain fork.
Yeah, seriously, they've got the fat F Baron down on them already. You know, I mean that's been the trend here.
Yeah,
right.
So just for the privacy swaps of any kind, there's going to be always like there's going to be people that don't want that to happen, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Of course not. I mean, we were just talking about the audit trail stuff earlier. One thing I noticed you guys didn't have in the conversation there is digital IDs. I mean, if you think about it, if everything's running on an AI blockchain, we have digital IDs and biometric logins. I mean, none of this shit's really going to matter once we get to that point. You know, but
yeah, like the biggest worry with that kind of tech, of course, is extraordinary amounts of totalitarianism, the likes of which the human race has just never seen. So the reason why people care about this sort of thing is not just because, like, you know, crypto anarchists are just kind of bad people or something like that. It's just that the reality is that compared to the worst crimes you could possibly commit with privacy, I mean the worst crimes in every sense of the word, the societal danger for like a pure digital totalitarian state is cannot be understated, like meaning control at a level that like even the sci-fi
Big Brother didn't even
is like way past 1984 or past any sci-fi you've ever seen. No, it's like you just have to leave it up to my imagination for 15 minutes and I can figure out how to control all of you.
Well, no, it's true. I mean, anytime power has been centralized, it's been abused every single time, every instance in history.
The incentive to abuse it will be 100% absolute. There is zero incentive not to abuse it. Let's put it that way. Because if you don't abuse it, someone will abuse it against you. It's just simple warfare. And, yeah, so this is kind of like the danger of not having privacy systems in place, and I think at the same time, it's not to say that people really generally want a crime filled, lawless society with all sorts of shenanigans going on with privacy, so there's that as well, but I think at the end of the day, like usually. A society that's more free usually turns out better than the ones that are less free. It'd be like a South Korea, North Korea type of comparison, essentially. So I think like most people that believe in liberty, which I think the good thing about the United States is despite like what people might generally think, I think whether you're left, right, or libertarian, I think on average, most human beings prefer liberty versus not, which is the stopgap to this. But at the same time, it's not a guarantee that liberty is maintained.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think you can see that in the polling, too. Like, you know, the polling on CBDCs, for example, I think it's something like, 10 or 12% of people support them, or maybe it's slightly higher than that. But I mean, even though the left, granted, I spent the first part of my life on the left. Even though the left's been pushing CBDCs, you know, significantly more, I mean, you have in excess of, I think, 85% of people in that political paradigm who are against CBDCs anyway.
You could make an actual argument politically, left or right, for CBDCs. That's the thing. The trouble with totalitarianism is you can make an argument from either direction. Either side of the aisle, in theory, could find a good reason to control people. When left unchecked. And I think
that's like a Noam Chomsky line, isn't it? Where totalitarianism exists in both extremes.
So there's not like you could come up with an argument for it. You could say like, okay, we want CBDCs because we don't want people to use like buy and sell drugs with it. And so we want to make it possible to sort of control what you use it for or something. And an anti-drug platform might be at that time of the, you know, that in that century might be a right leaning philosophy or whatever, right? Like, and then
right. The Patriot Act was passed in 2002 by a right wing administration, you know, and then it was
right
carried further by a left wing administration. So I don't think it's a mutually exclusive thing, you know.
Yeah, like you can use like either political view to make claims about like national security or surveillance or cryptography or like any of these things, and at some level the problem is also like if you look at genetically or like just phenotypically, if you followed like Jonathan Haidt's work, for example, he demonstrated that sociologically, globally, about 10-15% of the human race has a more libertarian mindset, which is basically the "you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone" mindset, and about something like 45% and another 45% is left or right, and that proportion is preserved throughout the planet. So the odds are, if you take any given country, the odds you're going to have a left country or a right country or somewhere in between that is much more likely than a libertarian based country. And the reason is just sheer numbers. Like like nature in the form of evolution has seen to it that our brains are comprised of people that are in these proportions. And the interesting thing about those proportions also is those proportions were true no matter which country in the world you looked at, almost globally. So there's an interesting proportionality in terms of the way people think, left, right, libertarian. And those phenotypes turned out to be very preserved throughout the world. So it's a very human thing. So if you let nature take its course, you are unlikely to get a libertarian country. The U.S. Constitution is special in this respect, in that the United States Constitution is the only one of any country in the world who, sort of like liberty, Bill of Rights is a thing where the government's goal is to, like, the goal of the Constitution is to prevent government from taking rights away that are inalienably yours and not given to you by the magic of the universe or God or however you want to look at it, right? So this is the nature of that, whereas most other countries, parliamentary and whatever, rights are given to you by the government, not the other way around, which actually doesn't make any sense at all because human beings are around before governments. Biological organisms were around before governments, so it doesn't make sense to have that.
Yeah, like, that,
so
that all
parliamentary that all the systems are basically
society, and then
And this is the thing, like, and remember, it was a lot of Europeans actually that actually created the United States Constitution in the first place. It was ancestors of Europe. It wasn't necessarily like, American Native Indians or something. Like it was basically a rebuke of this idea that like, that the government is there to be like a permanent nanny state type of thing. And what's interesting is over the past several hundred years in the United States, at least, what you have seen happen is the traditional left and the traditional right, which is again human phenotypically, meaning
like every 80 years.
Yeah. Well, what exactly. whether they shift or not, mentally, like the social model is genetically imbued in a sense, and forget about the named political parties, just forget about all that. But if all things being equal, a country that starts as relatively libertarian in its onset will become less so over time, just because both the left and right, the mental left and right in terms of like those type of brains, human brains, are in vast proportion majority to the libertarian brain. And so therefore the odds are you're going to get totalitarian of those two types at some point, which is where the phrase like, you know, the tree of liberty is refreshed by the blood of patriots comes from. Is this concession that like, and this is before people understood like the sociologic like relationships here. And like back then, we just have in the US at least, you happen to have a very lucky set of people where the people that joined up to form the initial constitution happened to have a relatively high proportion of libertarian thinkers compared to almost anywhere else in the world before. So that was a very like unusual set of circumstances that is very, very hard to replicate. It's very similar to how like it's hard to replicate the sort of immaculate conception of Bitcoin. The same is true in this instance, because the odds that you're going to get a group of people that just happen to be more libertarian just proportionally by the sheer numbers is just low. And over time, what's happened in the United States is because that proportion is lower, over time, the institutions do not get filled with libertarians. The institutions get filled with who? more proportionally so people on the left and people on the right, as you'd imagine, just based on the sheer absolute numbers, right? Mathematically, this is just true. So then what happens is you wind up with these kinds of states, regardless of whether the Constitution designed it that way or not. And it's a super interesting phenomenon to me. Including like what happens at the universities in the United States, U.S. universities have become like, I think the Heterodox Index says that something like 85% of all, 18 to 1 is the ratio of the number of liberal to conservative teachers, professors in U.S. universities, right?
So that, yeah, I think a lot of that started to shift though. With the civil rights movement and the introduction of intersectionality is like an actual viable scientific concept, even though it's a complete pseudoscience. I think you see that switch.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Haidt, who actually looked at this, like he created, I think, the Heterodox Society or the Heterodox Index, and he kind of looked at all of this. He's actually a professed liberal. He's like,
yeah,
of all people, he's like, hey, look, guys, like, I know it's your tribe and everything, but the reality,
dude,
is,
I'm a registered Democrat, so I mean, I have been for my entire life. But
so Haidt, Haidt's point, and this is Haidt, and you guys have probably seen him on YouTube or read his books and stuff. But anyway, he's an NYU professor, and basically Haidt's basic like comment to the society is that, hey, look, you have to preserve viewpoint diversity. You have to have some balance between left, right, libertarian in your institutions, because if you don't, what you'll wind up with is you'll have an eventual imbalance that leads to the collapse of that system. And the reason that will happen is because proportionally, if 45% of people in the world are sort of on the right, 45% are left, and let's say 10% are libertarian, what will eventually happen is if your institutions, your government, your universities, whatever, are too far off in one direction, what will end up happening is the opposite side will ultimately revolt. It's just a matter of time, right? Like, and then they get overthrown, and there's a gigantic rebuke of that. So it wouldn't be surprising, say, for example, the United States, is if a ton of like universities started becoming more popular that are vastly more sort of like conservative minded than liberal, or right minded than left minded. That's highly likely to occur just because of like eventually people will walk with their money, right?
Yeah, you're already starting to see a lot of that backlash happen right now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, I mean, there's some of it playing out. Look at what happened to Harvard, for example.
I was just about to say that. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that's what, the third one in a row now, too. So.
Yeah, like if you're interested in this sort of thing, like Heterodox Index, there's actually a website that actually ranks the universities about whether they like signed onto the FIRE protocol, which is like the freedom, like. Freedom of speech type of act type of thing, where it's like a contract where everyone signed it, you know, which university signed it, which ones didn't, expressing that they would protect free speech on their campus. The Heterodox Index, I believe, H-E-T-E-R-O. And you can look up the universities that are on this thing, which is actually kind of interesting.
Looking for my school right now.
Yeah, Heterodox. I forget the name of the, I forget the website. Heterodox something or another. Anyway, what's interesting about it is like it will show your different schools. I think Brown is at the top of the most liberal. Yale is at the top of the most liberal, and you know he makes the argument that some of the universities like have truth in their name, like Veritas in Latin, and you know the concept is that well these are institutions that we're interested in. Like truth above all else, right? As opposed to, like, in other words, it might be true that I am a certain racial group, but it might also be true I'm dumber than if someone of a different racial group, right? Like, or something like that. So there are, you know, truth it has a role in sort of rational society, and you know, several universities have Veritas in their name, but actually are no longer purveyors of truth anymore. They're more like purveyors of what is politically correct or what have you. And then of course there's other universities that are pure religious universities, say for example like Catholic or Jesuit universities or something, and they will favor not necessarily scientific truth, but they'll favor like religious truth, right? That's a little bit different group. So it used to be there'd be like universities that favored truth, universities that favored like, you know, you can almost make a triad of these things: universities that favor truth, universities that favor like religious like dogma, right? Some kind of dogma or the other. And then maybe another group that looks at just, you know, human created arbitrary dogmas, like in the politically correct movements and stuff like that. And that's a whole new different paradigm.
Yeah, I think it's so called Heterodox Academy.
Heterodox Academy. There you go.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to, there's an index somewhere you can go through the universities. It's quite funny to look at. And when you look at the ones at the very top, it's funny because when my son went to university, like he explicitly avoided the ones at the top of that list. He's like, fuck that. Like there's no point in going to these places at all. Cause you can get a decent education almost anywhere. Why would you want to associate with yourself with places that have no, no sort of like viewpoint diversity?
You know, man, I got to be honest. I find it kind of amazing that you have some grown ass kids and you've got a vault boy for your profile pic.
I've been around playing video games since they were invented, man. Like, so yeah. Like I've been around a bit.
Were you playing Fallout before Bethesda took it over?
That's yeah. Like awesome, I used to play Wasteland too. I don't know if you know that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Baron Brago and well, that group that made that long ago. It's one of the first like post-apocalyptic nuclear kind of like environments kind of fun thing. This was back in the like 90s sometime, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, video games like are very like I don't know, they inform us about a lot. Video games is how crypto was invented really too. So yeah, there's a lot about like there's a lot of intersection between politics, society, sociology, video games, DNA. Everything's just one big like spider web of interesting connectivity.
Seffy, where'd you go for undergrad, man? If you don't mind me asking.
Well, I don't really dox about just about anything about myself on here for a lot
yeah,
of
that's true. Yeah. Okay.
Like actually, yeah, I probably say too much anyway. But the point is, like,
it's okay. Yeah.
No, like, I try not to get into all that. But anyway, I think. Sociology is interesting. Genetics is interesting. I think behavioral genetics is interesting. The impact that what is it about your DNA that makes your brain the way you know you behave? That's a really cool area. Behavioral genetics is a very interesting area.
Absolutely.
And then and then how that before, like
my dad's an archaeologist, so I've been kind of entrenched in that thing.
Anthropology, archaeology, and all.
Yeah.
But I think
self-doxing. Jesus, I give out way too much personal.
It's. I do think it's interesting how, like, societies emanate from, like, you have DNA that makes you, and then you have a group of DNA that makes a group of people, and then you have all of those people bouncing around like billiard balls on a table, like interacting with each other, and that creates like the social movie or the kind of society or sociology. So sociology would be like the study of looking at how people behave like amongst each other and you know, interacting with each other. So if it's just you on a desert island, you wouldn't really have sociology. You just have psychology in a sense.
Yeah.
As soon as you add two people in the mix, now you have the making of like two different. When you have two different people instead of one, you have like sharing of resources. You have the, you know, sharing of ideas. You have the ability to maybe memorize twice as much stuff because now you have two brains of databases. You have two different sets of goals. Like, you know, you might be hungry and I might not be hungry. And so it's like, oh, let's save the hookup for later versus eating now. So all of that like plays a role. And then you add three people and then four, et cetera, et cetera. And you wind up with this.
A microcosm of cultural dissemination. Yep.
Yeah. And at some level, like if it was you had bee DNA and I had bee DNA, well, we'd behave like bees and we'd make honey or something. But we have human DNA and therefore we behave like humans. So clearly our DNA affects our society. Affects the way we think. It affects how our brain was created. Like if I had rat DNA, I'd have a rat brain. I don't. I have human DNA, so I have a human brain. So like the genetics and how it affects behavior is super interesting. And then ultimately, like, are there some truths about humanity that whether they're you like them or not are true? And there's a lot of nasty truths about humanity.
Oh yeah, of course. If you look at behavior, that's where societal moieties are born from, right? The whole idea of groupthink and regional competition is pre-programmed in our genetics. It's a survival mechanism.
So, yeah, how much? And then there's like the argument of how much is pre-programmed and how much can we actually divert our programming by knowledge or by whatever. And you could, you know, argue that till you turn blue, the nature
version. Yeah, man, but I mean, it's not just humans, though. It's like things like warfare aren't pre-programmed. It's a kind of macro scale, like evolutionary competition. I mean, you see it even in plants, right? Like how the hell did a pine tree evolve to have needles rather than, you know,
whatever
widespread leaves, right? So same concept.
No, and then teleology is a different study. Teleology is like the idea that, well, we know evolution happens, but can we look back and understand why a specific thing evolved, like the needles on a pine cone, or the, like, why do I have, you know, I don't know, hair on my head versus some other sort of apparatus, you know? So the teleology of things is a much more difficult thing to analyze because it's impossible to know all the variables. In fact, it's like a quantum impossibility, essentially, to know the teleology of why humans evolved the way they evolved or why, you know, whatever, because you can't go back in time to look at the all the phenomenon. In fact, today we're evolving. You and me, like our children and their children, they're evolving. But are we able to examine all the reasons why they evolved the way they do? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. Like, we know, for example, like modern agriculture has affected our evolution. Why? Because some people's guts are, you know, maybe going to get sicker with, you know, modern
lactose intolerance is a perfect example of that.
Yeah,
but some things you can get a reasonably decent bearing on the evolutionary mechanism.
Yeah,
you know, like that.
Yeah, lactose intolerance or just gluten insensitivity, like celiac sprue, celiac disease, or like a variety of these kinds of things. But the point I'm trying to make is like, you might be able to identify, like, okay, these are some things that might drive survival, and therefore who's going to mate with who, and therefore might ultimately reduce the, you know, reduce the number of people that have lactose intolerance in the future, or maybe like whatever, right? But what the indirect impact is that modern agriculture is indirectly driving our genetic, like genetic future in a sense. And it is a environmental feature that we have sort of added into the mix. And cooking food did this, by the way, too. One of the biggest things that happened between other primates and us is the starting of cooking food, which no other creature in the animal kingdom does. And that completely changed like how our gut behaves over the centuries, over the millennia, really, and has affected way our like calcium metabolism works, for example, the parathyroid gland, or like making it sort of vestigial in a sense, like the medullary cells of the thyroid, for example, that produce calcitonin is basically vestigial, or the appendix is probably largely vestigial as well. So there may be things that sort of changed over time. Teleology of like why those things changed and at what point and why, that's a much harder thing to prove, obviously. Because even with perfect data today, like, well, number one, we don't have perfect data about anything even today. Even if we had perfect data, we wouldn't know how we would look, let's say, you know, 1,000 years from now, 1,000,000 years from now, right? We don't have a way of predicting that. So that's an interesting thing about genetics as well. Like the nature of who we are, who we are going to be, who we were, and then how that's going to affect how we behave over time.
Yeah, I'm kind of counting on AI to make a few breakthroughs there, you know?
breakthroughs, but also what will happen is that AI is going to direct our genetic future. This is what I've been warning about for quite some time. Like,
dude, it always gets so dark, man.
It gets dark fast. Our genetic future is already being guided by
Jesus
AI.
Jesus Christ.
Right? Because like if you watch TikTok or if you're on Twitter or whatever and your mind is being altered by the algorithms on it, that's one of the reasons, like technology clearly has caused people to have less children, right? No question about it. Every country with access to technology has less children, period, end of story. You can spin it any way you want, like, oh, it's financial, it's this, that, and everything.
Advent of birth control, you know.
But yeah, birth control, modern agriculture, the use of petrochemicals for driving around, all the different reasons why you might think you might need less children, you can pin it down to one thing, and that is technology is the result of less children. Yeah. Like, there's no doubt about it. Which technology, you could debate that to your blue in the face, but the point is we know this is factually true, and we don't know how to reverse this problem, so... Like maybe AI solves that. Maybe AI makes us all like breed better, you know, whatever. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe it makes it worse. I don't know.
Mandatory 2.4 children.
Maybe 2.4 children. Yeah,
exactly.
The AI is like your little zookeeper, right? Because the thing is, we haven't been very good zookeepers of humanity anyway.
Yeah, that's so exactly why it's dark, though. Because
one could make the argument that AI is going to be a better zookeeper than we've been. I don't know. It's possible. It gets dark quick, though. Depending on, you know, but the accelerationist crowd is perfectly fine with this concept, right? They like the idea that AI becomes our babysitter, or that we.
Yeah, I think the vast majority of them are severely acoustic. I have a cousin who's been building neural nets for the last 15 years.
Uh-huh.
And 100% acoustic, like
autistic. Me,
yeah, yeah. No, it's
super autistic. yeah. So the thing is, do you want the autists to, you know, to rule the world? Is a question you have to ask yourself. Yeah. But that's what's happening. Because who designs the AIs and how their mind, the mind of the AI works?
Bruce monologue, but
yeah. yeah. So like, yeah, the autist token will be the one to have. For this anyway, yeah, it's a funny thing, like the tech space interestingly seems to favor having less children, whatever the reasons might be, and it's a fascinating human sort of interaction. But no question that computers and technology, since their inception, have clearly modified our genetic future, like without question, right? It's impossible for it not to. That's just how genetics works. Every single thing that a human being is exposed to affects like when you're going to meet a girl, when you're going to have kids with that girl, how many you're going to have, and everything else in between. And so, and technology is deeply rooted in our sort of like cultural and societal norms now. And that as a result affects our genetic future, period, end of story. Like there's no, it's not actually possible for it not to affect your genetic future. It just does. And if it doesn't affect you specifically because you're a Luddite, well, guess what? It affects every other human that's not a Luddite around you. So what are you going to do about it? Right? Like, so it's an interesting process. But this is why like some countries have like talked about TikTok, for example, like turning a bunch of kids into retards. And should we actually get rid of it? And this is the other weird dark part is like, if you're a free speech advocate, you'd argue that, okay, well, no, we shouldn't do all that. If you're a leftist, you might say, no, we have to modify that because it's making people think, you know, they're not, it's not making people think left. And if you're on the right, it's going to make you upset because it's not making people think right. And at the end of the day, like when AI comes along and it really doesn't conform with any human particular norm, like it doesn't conform with left, right, or necessarily libertarian, it has its own, like it has its own sort of like vibe going. And I don't mean, you don't even have to call it general intelligence. You don't even have to have like, a thing that is actually sentient. People make this mistake that the human race is only going to be driven by sentient machines. This is not true. Our behavior is modified every day. In fact, I'm talking to you on a cell phone, like talking to a bunch of people across the world. Like tech modifies our behavior, and how it modifies our behavior and whether that's for good or the bad, it has its own, not will, but like it's just a force of nature in of itself. AI is going to be the same way, in that it's going to drive us to do things that some of which we might think are good, some of which we think are bad, some of which we think we have had a hand in planning, and other things we're like, I have no idea why I want to buy that t-shirt. I saw an advertisement because Google fed it up to me. Now I want that thing, right? Like, so if marketing and advertising didn't work, all of what I'm saying now wouldn't be true, but we know that's true. Like, if you get exposed to images of like certain cars or something over and over again, you're going to want that thing more. If you see certain clothing or certain people, you know, it influences what you want. It influences what you care about because our brain works as a reactionary device. Like what we see, what we hear, what we smell, we can't help but react to it, right? Like our brain wouldn't work if we didn't react to our senses. And therefore like the analog hack, so to speak, of like making people do what you want them to do with analog hacks is very much a, like the art and science of, that like interrogation, sociology, advertising, marketing, all of this is all part of like just hacking the human experience to make people do shit. And AI is gonna be really, really good at that stuff. I think, what's his name? Mentioned this too, like, Sam Altman of OpenAI, like after so many years of like, he finally said, tweeted out something like, AI is going to be really good at persuading people. Well, like, duh. Like, you know, you don't even have to have anything close to artificial general intelligence. In fact, what are you going to regulate even? You know how Europe is like, hey, we're going to regulate AI. What are you going to regulate? You don't regulate very much of advertising and marketing now. I mean, like, a little bit of that's been done. Like, for example, you don't have cigarette ads in magazines accessible to children. And they took cigarette advertising off a lot of different things because it was like, hey, it's brainwashing people. TikTok is an example of just the next version of cigarette ads. And we know cigarette ads and all that stuff worked because why? In the United States, at least, something like 50% of the, almost 50% of the male population, if not more, was smoking at the turn of, I think before the turn of the century. That's down to about 15% now. Of the U.S. population that still smokes. But the point is, like, you can basically make people do shit that is not good for them, for sure, right? Just sheer manipulation or sheer advertising can do it. And AI is going to be great at that stuff. So, yeah, interesting stuff. But, like, I think sociology, psychology, all of these things dovetail on AI very, very deeply, which kind of interests me. But I know for sure the human race can't handle it. I have no, like, there is like no evidence whatsoever, like zero in my mind that the human race can handle this sort of thing. I mean, human race couldn't handle the simplest shit, like, I don't know, psychedelic substances or drugs, you know, mentally affecting. Like, look how many alcoholics you have. Look how many cigarette smokers you have. Look how many people that want to do drugs for reasons that are not explicable for any good reason except that people want to. So like when it comes to tech and, sort of like capabilities of these things, like human beings are not very good at controlling themselves is my take, you know?
Let alone something that's going to be, an actual billion times more intelligent, right?
I mean, oh yes. And very good at persuading. Let's not forget that.
Like, the machine God, right? And we're not even aware of when or how it will become sentient, right? I mean, if you look at it from the perspective of how human beings develop sentience and awareness in their infancy through
I don't think things even have to be sentient in order for them to be like really, really disruptive, though. Because like, think about this. Imagine the porn industry today, right?
Yeah. Which is also a major part of the reason for people not reproducing anymore.
Yeah. Oh, without question. Like the numbers got a lot worse when porn became widely available on computers, when the internet sort of like really started taking off, like 2000 plus, you know, and that became a big thing. Right. But think about it this way. Like if AI can produce like, human figures that can do full 3D anything, we're talking about next year, right? Like this year is going to like end of this year. We're talking about full 3D environments in AI, right? So we're not very far away. So that pretty much eliminates like, pretty much any sort of like interesting looking person you like, whatever your characteristics you care about, you're gonna be able to program into this thing. So it's gonna be like the primo porn engine. It's not very different from that movie. What's it called with Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Mars and shit? Oh, what's it called?
I know. Jesus Christ.
Damn it. Now I'm not remembering. but you remember like he gets into this thing and he's able to like, you know, create his fantasy girlfriend with the brunette with the size of boobs he likes and all that. Remember that? Like, and that kind of capability is coming out now. Like it's going to happen within, you know, the next couple of years. Widespread AI porn is going to be normal.
I wonder at what point we're just going to become like a detached limbic system, you know?
Exactly. Really, it's just a limbic system AI. In a jar. So what's interesting about this though, is that that's coming soon. And what we know about human beings is human beings are going to love that shit. We know that for sure because they always do. Right. And so, I mean, just look at AI pictures of women today as a male and you're like, hey, that looks pretty real. Right. And that's a pretty good looking picture to the extent that like you're getting to some that you're not even sure are real. In fact, they look so real that you couldn't even care less if they were or not. And I have a threshold of like theory in that, like, if it takes you 30 seconds to figure out if something's real, okay, fine. Right. There's a little bit of cognitive dissonance, but if it takes you a minute to figure out if something's real, it might as well be real because online, if I didn't know Drew, if you were real or not, if I wasn't, I didn't know if I was talking to an AI, I'm going to speak to you like another human being because how else could I not? What am I going to just be rude to you? right? You're going to talk to AIs just like you talk to anybody else. You're going to interact with them like anyone else, because you won't know if they're real or not. And if that threshold goes to 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, at what threshold do you say, wait a minute, I don't know if anyone on here is real? And at which point you're like, reality and digital space is basically.
Yeah. So you're going to start out every dialogue with like cues from a Turing test.
Yeah, right. Well, but the Turing test won't even work, because the reality is that these systems are smarter than most humans. So then the question is going to be, wait, I got to do the retard test. Like, okay, like, you know, the AI wouldn't get this right, but a human wouldn't get this right, but the AI would, you know, kind of thing. But either way, the point is that like 90% plus of the human race will be mentally incapable of doing this, right? Like, so once you get a threshold where
how does this not bring you to like the most crippling depression imaginable? Ever since ChatGPT came out last year, and I started thinking about this.
Race is about to be like go through a very, very like serious cognitive depression problem as we go forward. And it's already begun. Like the idea that it hasn't started already, like tech already started this. That's why people are having less children.
I actually came into my boss's office last year after trying out ChatGPT last November, and had like a similar conversation. And like the conclusion for both of us was, yeah, like 5 or 10 years till we're fucked, man. So like might as well just completely.
Yeah, no, everyone comes to this conclusion ultimately. It's not a particularly optimistic one necessarily. Like somehow or another, the accelerationist crowd, like the EACC crowd or whatever you want to call them, that like they do some mental gymnastics to figure out that they're going to be happier, but they have no proof of this. This is mostly autistic nerds talking bullshit.
Yeah, the reality is the Google CEO interview on 60 Minutes, a year ago, talking about AI, and guys like, do you feel no guilt about unleashing this thing that you have very little understanding of on the world? And then the CEO of Google says,
let me put it this way.
We don't really understand how the human mind works. And it's like, that's the least reassuring thing I've ever heard. Yeah,
exactly.
Heard,
no, it's always mental gymnastics to say that like, oh, there's going to be an optimistic version of this. Imagine we're going to cure cancer or something. That's always the like retort. But like human happiness is a very hard thing to pin down. And it's certainly not very hard to break. We know that, because if that were not true, we wouldn't have suicide, right? So we know that this is an easy thing to break. The mind is actually a lot more fragile than most people would like give themselves credit for once you get past this certain ego. And advanced interrogation, like with CIA and stuff, like, you know, you've heard about this. You can break practically anybody with the right tools and the right like tactics. We do this in SEAL training and stuff, you know, like with SEER training and everything. Like most people can be broken. Let's put it that way, either physically or mentally or whatever. And the impact of AI is always thought to be always like the techno-optimistic view. But the problem is for every optimistic version of AI, there'll be the pessimistic version that someone's going to use against you. So it's going to be quite the warfare. And I just don't see like human beings generally aren't smart enough to sort all this out. Now, if you let an AI sort this out and say, okay, AI is going to be our zookeeper and we're going to let the AIs fight it out and decide, you know, are we going to be left? Are we going to be right? Are we going to be libertarian? Are we going to be what? Like, who are we going to vote for? All this shit. Then you're going to feel less free, right? So, like, notice how farther and farther you go into tech, the less you feel like you're in control of your world and, like, something else is controlling your world. Not that control is an illusion to begin with, to some extent. We don't know what asteroid's going to hit us, and we don't know what tsunami is going to hit us or whatever, right? Yeah. So, like, control is somewhat an illusion. We could go extinct.
Simulation is born, right? You know,
so to the extent that like the way the U.S. Constitution was kind of created, notice what the point of the U.S. Constitution was, is to preserve the maximum feeling of freedom. Like most, even the people that wrote the Constitution, some of the early writings were like, wait, is free will an illusion? Is there even such a thing? Was a concept over 250 years ago?
My dad literally had me read The Illusion of Free Will.
Sam Harris's book or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, but the free will for sure is an illusion. There's no question about it. This is how biological systems work. But it feels free, right? Our life feels free, even though it's an illusion. And even Sam says, you know, I enjoy the illusion. It's fun. But the problem with AI is you create a system where you will fundamentally feel less free and break the free will illusion. And it's really important not to break that for people. And I think there was a study done, a sociologic study that he cites, where it's like, when you point out to people that the will is an illusion, you do the, you show them the actual experiments, you show them how like fMRIs can detect what you're going to think before you even realize you consciously thought it, like making decisions, then people start thinking that when their will is less free, they notice it. And then what they do is they start acting like more criminally. For one, they tend to cheat on tests and other things because they're like, oh, you know, if my will is not, you know,
yeah, it's nihilism.
It's a nihilism exactly that develops with the knowledge. Precisely.
It's exactly how I felt after reading Nietzsche the first time, which is
pretty
fucking dark and awful. But
yeah, I think the thing with AI, the issue is going to be, do you have the AI that tells you the truth, which is going to basically be terrible because we don't want to know the truth about the universe. We like living in our matrix. Or B, do you want an AI that makes a matrix that of some design that is maybe a limbic system stimulator, right? Here's the problem. No matter which one you get, you're fucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, like
ignorance,
how
the
AI
right?
people have not figured this out yet is beyond my imagination. They don't understand anything about how the universe works then. Like it's a stalemate. No matter what you do, you're fucked. I don't know. I don't see it coming out well personally, but.
Well, now that everyone who is here for crypto is like sufficiently pushed out of the group, I don't know. Maybe we should throw some altcoin tags in the title.
Yeah, really. Hold on, let me
get Wabi back
here. So, what's mooning right now is AKT, by the way. If it just broke out of its recent range of like 264, it's at 293, and its next fib level is 366. So, if anyone wants actual alpha here, that's one that's on the move that I think it'll hit resistance here.
Yeah, I'm already feeling FOMO.
It could probably get there within a few days if you look at its previous movements.
I've got a good bit, but it definitely doesn't feel enough. I feel like it's enough.
Which one?
I said I have a good bit of AKT, but it definitely doesn't feel like it's enough, especially
when it's enough. Moves,
so.
I think I got a pretty good size amount of it just because but I've had it sitting there since like 3 years. So like, this is not some sort of giga trade or something. Like it really, right. I'm just sort of in the green over the past, like, I don't know, probably month and a half. So, but it does look, it's going parabolic on the log scale, which it means like it's going to go straight up. Line on a log scale is parabolic already on a linear scale. Curvature on a log scale is basically like exponentially bigger, meaning it'll do multiples fast potentially. But I'd like to see it hit 24. If it hits 24, I'm going to sell it and buy my wife something nice.
Nice. So. I mean, I was going to say, it sounds like a HODL for you. I mean, if you held it the whole way through.
I don't know. It became a HODL because like I got caught underwater with a thing and I staked it and everything. I like the project and I like the team and everything. So it's not to say that it's not a good project, but like at $24, is it worth that kind of money? Fuck no. Like it should be sold at that level. I mean, there's something to be said for overbought conditions, and that would make it overbought. So if it hits all-time high at 848 and it runs to its next extension, I mean, Jesus, like,
oh my god, though, some of the things we're talking about, like what did you say earlier, fetch at $27, talk about overbought, man. That's like,
oh yeah, but then again, here's
like
the thing,
the Dogecoin of this cycle.
Fetch could be like 10% of its value now. It's still overbought, right? So the reality is that like most of this stuff is memes and gambling and global liquidity just flowing to noise. Like it doesn't mean anything. Like there's almost like no rationality there. So Fetch is a great example. Like, was it worth $1.20 when the first time it reached $1.20? No. Is it going to be worth $1.20 when it reaches $1.20 this time? No.
But it will, and it'll probably moon. Like
right.
in excess so the, of $20.
Yeah, so, markets are irrational longer than you can stay solvent. Always remember that. Like this is, and with crypto, like you have super, super highly irrational systems where people expect moon, right? Like, so people manifest it because they hold on because they realize like, hey, wait a minute, if it breaks high. First of all, the fact that we're so close to high for Fetch means the high is coming, right? Like it's almost a foregone conclusion at this point, especially this early in the cycle. And then if you say, okay, well, what happens usually if you break high? Okay, you're going to hit like at least one fib extension. That's at 479. that's feasible. Like, and maybe I should sell there and just say, fuck this and get out, right? That's a good, reasonable thing to do. The next level above that is 988. But usually, like, out of these breakouts, these things usually run like a good solid, again, it depends on the market cap, but these things run typically 2 to 3 fib extensions. And for fetch, that would put it at the, like, a $27 level, which is absurd, but, you know, there you go. And the next level, but that's 195, which is practically impossible. So I would say, like, it, for fetch, if I sold it at like somewhere between 5 to 10, that would be the non-greedy thing to do. If I try to catch the highest extension at 27,
no,
clearly that's greed.
Yeah. Let's, you know, let's stick with it. Let's stick with it, man.
Like, run it up to turbo. So yeah, but the thing is, like, these things run fast though. I mean, like, think about last time fetch ran, you're talking about last year, it went from like 0.007 to like 0.17 in one run. Then it dumps down to like, let me see, it was like 5 cents. And then the next run, it just goes straight to like 75 cents. 5 cents to 75 cents. Is there any rationality in that? No, of course not. Then it dumps again, like middle of last bull market, to like 16 cents, and then it runs to $1.20, right? Like, it didn't matter where you were in these moves. If you caught them, you did pretty well. But like, if you're talking about an all-time high break and you're early in a bull market, I mean, shit, that's a nice looking chart. And it all happened on AI narrative BS, right? It's not like, what, you think fetch is going to change the world of AI? Fuck no. It's just it's a proper meme coin. That's all it really is. I mean, you saw, like, if you were here, Drew, like maybe early last year, I mean, early in 2023, and like, yeah, people are like, hey, we're going to go ride the AI narrative. It's going to be big. We're just going to get everything that has AI in the name, and like, whatever, shill it, buy it, whatever.
Yeah. It's entirely a meme. I mean, I can't even think of a token right now that has its own native neural net. I think there may be one or two.
Native neural, right? Net. Get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. I know, right?
So, not one of them actually is an AI. They're just kind of like AI adjacent shit.
Yeah. Well, so I'd say the closest thing to an actual AI token would be Akash, right? Because it's,
yeah, where you can run AI on a
decentralized GPU, right?
Sure,
or then,
yeah,
or then maybe Andromeda, right? So you have decentralized
crypto automation
operating system. So,
mm-hmm.
But.
And that's more algorithms. It's not really AI in the sense of like neural nets and stuff. But yeah, it's like, but anyway, yeah, a lot of this is this meme anyway. The point is, like, as far as like moon coins, yeah, fetch actually now, after it did this pullback, it's come all the way back to 73 now. Like, the odds it gets past its recent high of 79, I would say, is like just about 100%. I think it's a good gamble either way now. You might have like, you know, one of the things, anytime we have these big pullbacks, like with BTC dumps, you know, you're always wondering, hey, wait a minute, is this the turnaround where we have to have a big correction for 3 months? And then, you know, that takes another 3 months to get back up to previous thing and whatever, right? Because that would be like, imagine fetch went to 61 cents in February of 2023. This is the beginning of the like OpenAI excitement. And it dumped down to 17 cents. So 65 cents to 17. And then it started running again and came to where it is now at 73. So because it already ran back up to prior high and retested it just this last week, by the way, at 60 cents, not the prior high, but the prior like resistance, that's a pretty good run. And it just tells you there's more gas in the tank at this point. And if you hit high, I think the odds that you get to the next fib level is very good. And the reason is because its chart, its price action is already now back to 2019, right? It'd be different if this just showed up now, but to have a 2019 coin, not only sort of like obviously moon in the last bear market, but then on top of that now retesting, you know, getting close to prior high on like a yearly chart, that's impressive, right? So there's not very many charts like fetch. Like, who cares why it's doing it? That's not even the point, but the chart tells you all you need to know as far as like being one of the most bullish charts in crypto right now.
Yeah, all I know is I hope it moons like a sufficient amount of time before Zeph and Link so that I can...
Yeah, so you can rotate.
Yeah, exactly.
But these things, when they move, man, it's like quick. Like, so for example, like the last fetch run from like, let's say a nickel to the top, like the nickel to its local top last year was like... It was like a November 23rd to April 5th was like a run, and it just went like multiple fib extensions up, right? So if you look now, like this recent drop was on, for Fetch, it was like, let's see, it was, there was a 17 cent dip. It went to 17 cents on October 16th. Now we've run already within a few months to 76 cents. So you could argue that, like, if you're going to hit the next fib extension at 477, that could happen within 3 months, right? That's a pretty good run. Now, is it going to happen even faster than that? I doubt it. You know, it's got a pretty good size market cap, and it has like a fair amount of bag holders, I suppose, but very little volume resistance up to prior high. If you hit prior high for this thing, I think within a month it'll go to $5. So $1.20 to $5, I would say, would happen within a month, because there's no bag holders, there's no resistance, there's no nothing, right? So that gets interesting. That's why also, like, all-time high breaks are popular for people to trade on. Like, I bought the Kuji, I bought Fujira today, like, you know, and it's close to all-time high break again. So the reason is because all-time high breaks tend to run, and so therefore, like, it's a reasonable sort of like gamble that you could get some upside. So Fetch, when it hits 120, it becomes actually more palatable then. If it sounds stupid, like, wait, why would you not buy it now and wait till the all-time high break? Because that's like,
because everybody loves green candles, right?
Yeah, everyone loves that pop above the all-time high. And not only that, but they'll take it on with leverage. So the nice thing about buying here is that you don't have to have leverage at the all-time high break. You let other people pump your bags of 5 bucks leverage and dump on them. That's what you do. That's how this works, right? So you don't let the leverage players get all the glory. You basically take their money. This is how this works.
So what's your plan with today's Kuji buy? Are you going to let it run, since that run is like imminent? It's right here, and then rotate that particular.
Yeah. Well, Kuji's easy, because it's like, okay, so it's a 500 mil market cap. It is a very credible ecosystem, right? It's not like one of these like pump and dumps or meme coins or something. Like, they really have good shit going on there. Like, the ecosystem, everything's beautiful, all that, right?
But you know, that doesn't translate to price action. Like,
well, 8, 9 times, but if 10. I was going to gamble, like you were asking, am I going to like ride a little pump and then sell? So in this one with Kuji, what I decided to do is, okay, let's run it. Let's get enough that I feel comfortable here. And I have this stuff from like 25 cents, like 50 cents or something, by the way. So it's like now at like $5. So I bought another tranche of this now at this break, with the thinking that, okay, I will, like, yeah, where do I run it to? I think this bull market, it could definitely make it to the $25 to $70 range. Definitely. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if this next run went to $25. A 5X from here would not be surprising at all to me. Because you'd be talking about like a $2.5 billion market cap, that's all, right? I mean, we have like tons of shit at that market cap that isn't half as good as Kuji. And I mean, half as good.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I mean,
it looks like a relatively easy one from the perspective that people that use this ecosystem are likely to hodl their Kuji. Why? Because it's, one, it's not inflationary, and two, like, they love the ecosystem. Like, who uses the Kuji ecosystem doesn't like it? Nobody that I'm aware of. Like, there's almost no FUD as far as like people complaining for whatever, right? So like, to me, it's like, so what I decided to do with this one is I bought it with the intent that, okay, this is one of my bags. It's like, again, one of those you don't want to fumble, really. Like, I buy now and hold to like maybe $70, something like that, which would be over a 10X from here. It's like a 15X, something like that. Mm-hmm. That was my theory. So I got a sizable amount again now that matches the amount that I bought, like in cash value, that I ran up from like, I don't know, 50 cents or something.
Yeah, so Kuji is one of your baseline holds.
Yeah, I averaged up on this one. Well, I don't know about baseline hold. I think I will sell it all. Like, I don't think it's one that I'm just going to hodl to whatever. I think there is like a range. Can you hear me?
Yeah, AFK, phone call.
Yeah, it happened again. Anyway, no, what I was going to say is with Kuji, I think you know, like, let's say it dropped after I bought it. Like, let's say, you know, it goes back down to, yeah, I don't know, the previous fib level of 285. Am I going to worry about it? No. Right. So it's one of those I can feel confident that if it goes down, buyers will be found. It's that simple. Right. So like, I know that buyers will be there. You know, at those market caps, like almost for sure. So that's why I feel confident here. And I think that's why other people feel confident for the same reason. That's why it's going to moon. Right.
What do you have is like, do you have anything as like a long-term hold that like, that you're not going to part with? Even like in a bear run?
I think that'll really depend on like this season. I think it's going to really depend on like how well teams are executing. And whether I think like that particular coin has gas in the tank to the level where it's like it's going to beat the rest of the market, even during bear market times. Like most coins don't do this, right? That's the problem. So the question is, should we?
I mean, Chainlink has a pretty flat chart, even mm-hmm. in bear markets. I mean,
well, Link, yeah, you know, Link was flat, but it dropped, remember, from $55 down to $5. Right. So it got absolutely crushed as far as like sales. I think what happened with it was probably some of these players like
relative to
FTX,
relative to all these other players like Rune or any of these others. I mean, we're talking about like drops that are in excess of 95%.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then if you consider, you know, how inflationary Link is on top of that, how much of that was an actual drop from people selling and how much of that was from them, you know, releasing new tokens into the environment, right?
I mean, who really knows? Yeah, but I think what it was is it was probably Chainlink is widely held. So Chainlink's problem was it probably faced a lot of like selling pressure from estates that were getting liquidated, like Voyager, Celsius, like whoever, right? Like FTX. I bet everybody held some Chainlink and they probably had at some point or the other, there may have been selling pressure for these reasons. So because it's so widely held, it might have gotten wrecked even more, oddly enough.
I gotcha.
Because institutions got wrecked like more than average people did last season.
Yeah, dude, that's because of all that excessive leverage and fraud. I mean, it was
exactly.
Never seen anything like it, dude. It's
SBF and shenanigans wrecked the crypto space pretty much. At the same time, like some of these companies like lent ridiculous amounts of money to to various folks, Three Arrows Capitals, whoever. And they thought they were making a good buy. Like they thought they were going to moon their bags and they were going to get rich. Right. But they didn't realize how much shenanigans were happening at the base layer.
God, these phone calls, man. I'm about to invest in a spaces only phone for Seffy. Cat Pants, how you doing there, buddy?
Oh, just tweeting out my daily tweet. What's up, dude?
Not too much, man. What's that daily tweet, brother?
Oh, this one today.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ants dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss. And I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lace, stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats. And then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats. And if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy. Before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works. And we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, say and wonder about the worth and play. Ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. We'll be right back.